200 years ago, there lived a Welsh Unitarian lay preacher who founded the South Wales Unitarian Association. His name was Iola Morcanwy. I'm not sure of any Welsh speakers here, pronouncing that correctly. He was an important member of the British 18th century Druids who had revived the old Celtic traditions. He loved visiting the many ancient stone circles found all over Britain, and especially the greatest of them all, Stonehenge. These stones are built to honour the solstices and our ancestors. They are built so that the returning sunshine peeps between two key headstones at the December solstice. As Iola stood in awe amidst these stones, he wrote the following words, which take us back 4,500 years ago when these stones were erected. As the sun, so shy, speeds on to hide behind the western hills, I stand within this ancient circle with its rugged stones pointing to the sky, like the digits on the clock of time, the time that has refused to move. And as I touch the stone, I feel the hands of those, my brothers and sisters, who at the dawn of life erected to that same old sun this temple of eternal praise, and thank the sun, the source of light and love, for just another day to be alive. And now I hear in the stillness of this hill, where there's no time, the voice of him who said, "Let there be light." And there was. There is. And will be tomorrow for our sons and daughters, and their children too. Wherever our ancestors have come from, these stones remind us that we are but a link in the human chain. Have our lives helped carry that chain forward? What can we do this coming year to see the chain is strengthened? What new rays of sunshine can we bring into this world and to those around us? We'll follow the gong into the silence. The story I have for you today, a true one, I believe, is how January the 1st became our modern New Year. Have you ever wondered this? How many of you know? No hands up? Why was this day chosen when the midwinter solstice was 10 days ago? Are we not as smart as the early Neolithic people who had figured out December 22nd as the longest night? Are we just a bit stupid? Why? And why is December named as the 10th month? Des 10. November, the 9th month. October, the 8th month, and so on. Then we have the nothing days. We're beginning them right now, this week. It all lies in our links to the old pagan Roman Empire, which began with a lunar system and 10 months. How many of you here have heard of the nothing days that we're starting right now? I think they were called the nothing days because nothing much grew for the next 2 months. At that time, the official new year began in March, March the 1st. December, as the name tells you, was the 10th and last month, followed by the nothing days for 2 whole months. That system was refined in 700 BC, and 2 more months were added, January and February. Then macho Julius Caesar came along, and he established a solar calendar instead of the lunar calendar. He chose January the 1st as the beginning of the new year, and hence the calendar is often called the Julian calendar. Now, where did the name January come from? Again, we observe the replacement of the feminine, the moon, symbolized by the moon, by the masculine, the sun. Originally, it was Juno, who was the two-headed goddess of heaven, who guarded the gateway of birth and death, and who had a lovely title called the Mother of Time, ruling the hinge at the back of the north wind. But the summer solstice had already been named after Juno. So the patriarch rulers converted two-headed Juno into a new god, a male god called Janus. And they named January after Janus, the two-headed god. One set of eyes reflecting on the past and another head turning to the future. Have you made your resolutions for next year? How many have made a resolution for next year? Or a few of you. The Romans later celebrated the big festival, their big festival, on December the 25th in honor of the birth of Mithra. That was the birth of Mithra, the son of the sun god, December the 25th. And this was followed by 12 days of holiday, which they called the Saturnalia, and the last day of which, January the 6th, was one of the biggest celebrations of all. And therefore, we've arrived at the notion, the concept of the 12 days of Christmas. However, when Julius Caesar became the boss, he cut back the celebration. He cut 5 days from the holiday, from January the 5th back to December the 31st. He had all the government employees begin their new jobs on January the 1st, not the 6th. Why? Do any of you know? It strikes me that he was a puritanical type, wanting to cut back on all the carousing and feasting. 1 week was time enough off for the troops. It wasn't good for the efficiency of the empire. His soldiers were too hungover by the 6th, so he made them show up on January the 1st. The 12 days of Saturnalia became 7 days, but just for a little while. The Christianized Roman Empire restored the 12 days and made them the 12 days of Christmas. They also adopted the Julian calendar. But then in medieval Europe, the Roman Church considered that these celebrations were basically pagan and unchristian. So back in 567, they abolished January the 1st, the beginning of the new year, and went back to March the 1st. And at one time, it moved to March the 25th. This is in contrast, of course, to the local Celtic culture that was still celebrating November the 1st as New Year. It wasn't till 1582 that Pope Gregory came along, and he restored January the 1st. And he also worked out that Julius Caesar had got his maths wrong, and he'd made leap year every third year, and it should be every fourth year. So Pope Gregory made it every 4 years for the leap year. The Catholic countries adopted the Gregorian, it's called the Gregorian calendar, including Scotland. But it was only gradually adopted by other countries. England, for example, did not adopt the new calendar until 1752. So if you had lived in Canada in 1750, or in the United States, you would have had to wait till March the 1st to celebrate New Year's Day. So, think of that. The Scots, however, always liked to be different. So they celebrated January the 1st from 1600 on. The Presbyterians reversed the medieval church's ruling. They said New Year was the holy day. And it was Christmas that was pagan, papist, and a time for getting drunk. Scrooge would have been quite at home in these days because 50 years ago in Scotland, civil servants had to work on Christmas Day. And they got 2 days off at New Year. And New Year was also the family holiday, the time when the families got together. For example, I remember my uncle in Edinburgh used to work on Christmas Day. New Year resolutions were first known in ancient Mesopotamia. The Romans, of course, had had them too with their two-headed god looking backwards and forwards. Later, other things were added to New Year. How many of you cleaned your house for New Year? No hands up at all. Oh yes, one hand, two hands. How many of you paid off all your debts, including your Visa card? Oh, several. Very good. How many have made up with everybody with whom you've had an argument? People haven't had arguments, maybe that's right. Scotland added in its own traditions, which vary according to which part of the country you're in. Universal first putting is first putting your neighbour and friends as soon after midnight as possible. Now, the word hogmanay, which was yesterday, we don't really know what the origin is. As soon as possible, part of first putting, anyways, the tradition is as soon as possible after midnight, a tall, dark, and handsome man, maybe he doesn't need to be handsome, but at least tall and dark, needs to first put your home, bringing something to warm your house or yourself. So it could be coal, or whiskey, or money, or food. You have to have dark hair. I wondered about that, and I think it was because the Viking invaders had fair hair. So this was proving you were not a Viking. The visitor had to be rewarded with food and drink. There are many variations throughout Scotland, and people have fun doing it, such as lighting and keeping a bonfire going all night, leaving silver on the doorstep, eating 12 mince tarts for each month of the year, dressing in cattle skins and beating a skin drum. Singing and visiting friends is part of it. By coming here today, you are celebrating New Year as well as experiencing our third Unitarian principle, celebrating friendship and community. We're also celebrating our seventh principle, the interconnected web of all existence, remembering when an integral part of our lives was our relationship with fields and our apple orchards. And we're lucky enough to have an apple orchard. The word wassail comes from the old Viking or Norse, and it could also be from the Anglo-Saxon. It means be in good health. Singing a wish of good health to friends and neighbours, and also, of course, to one's fruit trees. Wassailing could be done any time during the 12 days of Christmas, but usually on January the 6th, the last day, or at New Year. The wassail maiden, or queen of the orchard, sprays the apple trees with sweet cider or apple juice, or places a cup in the branches to complete the ceremony. And we're lucky today to have Emma as our wassail maiden. This is supposed to guarantee their health and fertility. Then the revelers go over and visit friends. This popular activity came to Canada with the settlers and merged with the other traditions of carol singing and partying. So it's a pity in a way that it's lost its connection with the seventh principle, the interconnected web of all existence. There seems to be some scientific reason for this ceremony, as I read that the farmers in northern India found that spraying their crops with Coca-Cola or sweet juice was cheaper and just as effective as using Monsanto's expensive chemicals. Monsanto wasn't very happy about that. The sugar seems to attract the insects and ants, which ate up the bugs or aphids, destroying the plants. Perhaps the same principle was at work in Northwest Europe, and they discovered that. Of Auld Lang Syne. This is a little bit of an unknown tradition, the British Unitarian Druids. The ancient Celtic tradition in Europe revolved around the reverence for nature, the sacred earth, and the celebration of the seasons. The Christians cleverly incorporated many of these early traditions into the early Christian church to encourage people to convert to Christianity. Most did, but later on many gave up the Christian overlay and chose the best of the old religion for themselves, and they called themselves modern-day Druids. They deeply regretted the loss of reverence for the sacred earth. They are found today not only in Celtic areas of Scotland and Ireland, but also in Cornwall, Wales, Brittany, and throughout England. One year, on June the 21st, Mel and I stumbled onto one of their gatherings at the Avesbury Standing Stones near Stonehenge. Dozens of robed druids and green men warmly invited us to join a procession through the ancient stones there at Avesbury and to a hand-fasting ceremony, which was the old-fashioned wedding ceremony, tying people's hands together at the wrist. There were 7 weddings that day. The Celtic New Year was November the 1st. The winter solstice was called a fire ceremony, associated with holly, ivy, and mistletoe, a tradition which has lasted well. The Celtic New Year was divided into 2. The oak ruled from the summer to the winter solstice, and then holly ruled from December the 21st to the summer solstice. People hung up holly and ivy in their homes against witchcraft. Mistletoe was for fertility and also against lightning. The green man was part of the ritual, symbolizing the rebirth of growing things, and is found in many old churches in Europe today. If you read the best-selling book, The Da Vinci Code, you remember it ends up at the Rosslyn Chapel near Edinburgh. If you were to visit that, you'd find dozens of green men in the chapel there, intertwined in elaborate stone carvings. Later, the green man was given other names, Puck, Robin. Other fertility symbols were found in the old churches too. My brother, who was a Presbyterian minister, was rather embarrassed when my husband Mel kept pointing out the fertility symbols in his church walls. I commented that the symbols weren't having much effect on the church membership. Maybe we should follow that pagan tradition. How about it, round the building committee? Have a few fertility symbols built into our walls? Most histories of the Unitarians and Universalists ignore this Celtic and Druidic tradition, and it's a pity. Earlier I read you the poem of Iola Magantwy, the Welsh Unitarian preacher and key member of the 18th century Druidic fraternity. He claimed to be heir to the wealth of much of the bardic lore and could link the old and the new Druidism. He established the Bards of the Isle of Britain in 1792 at a big ceremony in London. This later evolved into the famous singing festival, the Welsh National Eisteddfod, one of the biggest musical events in Wales. Iola was a political radical, a friend of Joseph Priestley and of Tom Paine, who wrote The Rights of Man. And he also wrote many of the Welsh Unitarian hymns. Then 100 years later, along came George MacGregor, a Universalist minister in South London, and he was elected chief Druid for 37 years, 1909 on, and then followed by his son. And he said this is quite compatible with Unitarianism or Universalism. At that time, the Druidic order was ahead of its time, and it incorporated the feminine into the masculine as part of the divine. The earth particularly was seen as feminine. As we celebrate this ancient Celtic tradition of the Wassail Maiden today, we are remembering our connection with the orchards and the crops, the connection of the feminine and the masculine, of darkness and returning light. Now today, immediately after we have sung the Wassail song, we will be led by the bagpipes and our Wassail Maiden, Emma, round the room and out the back door to the apple orchard, which you may know is beyond the farmhouse and situated at the edge of the labyrinth. We will first visit, the leaders will first visit the memorial wall, symbolic of the stones of our ancestors. And this will give you time to slip on your coats and join us on the pathway. Follow the pipes. As mentioned earlier, our Wassail Maiden will bless an apple tree with apple juice collected by Brad and Madeleine from our trees to encourage a fruitful harvest next year. Then we will celebrate fellowship back here at coffee hour.